Tommy. I'm here with Craig Hoffman from the Take Command podcast and the Hoffman Show on the Team 980. I'm also here with my man, Big Doug. We're here with a mini camp preview. Let's get it on. Gentlemen, it's good to have you guys this morning. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. Great. I'm amped up after that intro. That is the best graphics package. That's so much better than anything we have on our radio show.
I think you ready to go, Craig. Dude. You're just not getting ready to go.
It's a very epic intro. I appreciate the guys. Thank you for that. So, guys, I have to start off every show with a little icebreaker to kind of get you going. It's June. It's warm weather. You know, I'm a teacher, so summer's around the corner. I'm really excited about that. My question is about barbecue today, and we'll start off with Craig, and we'll throw it over to Doug. So, Craig, what is your signature barbecue dish? What are you bringing to the party? What's the Hoffman dish that you bring over to a summer barbecue for your friend's house?
Okay, so first of all, when you said it's going to be about barbecue, I thought, and Doug will get this as a fellow, now Doug being a Carolinian, yeah, I grew 100%. Up in South Carolina, I thought we're talking like pulled pork. I was ready for like a vinegar, mustard sauce type of question.
I want to hear about that too, though.
I wasn't anticipating a like to the barbecue, you know, okay. kind of question. Man, that's a good, that is tough. I will say, as lame as this might sound initially, my wife is an incredible salad maker. So like, okay. If you want like a really good like summer salad with berries and apples or stuff like that, like we're going to bring that. She's going to make it. It's going to be incredible. I'm a grill guy. I love whether it's burgers, hot dogs, chicken, whatever. Like I think I'm decently good on the grill. So that would probably be my contribution is like, yeah, I'll take care of the burgers. I'll season them up nice and good. Maybe we'll go with a little, you know, if people are adventurous, whether you chop up some bacon, put in there, whether you go with some chorizo to mix in with the ground beef, some different things you can do to really, really spice it up. And then decent enough at cooking it over the open flame. So that's probably my contribution.
I love that. Okay. Before I throw it over to Doug, are you more of the vinegar based barbecue guy or the tomato based guy?
I grew up in South Carolina. So we are a mustard based state and I am very fond of the mustard based sauce. So pulled pork, like a pulled pork sandwich with like a really good mustard based barbecue sauce. Like that's the jam. Right there.
I love it. What about you, Big Doug?
That is the jam. Mostly vinegar, real like the lighter the better for the barbecue. You know how that goes.
Eastern North Carolina. That's where it's at.
Than it does anything else. I can't. But I don't put ketchup on anything anymore.
So I like ketchup.
Ketchup-based barbecue is not something I'm into anyway. George, we usually do like a nice pasta salad, cold pasta salad to take. I like a little, maybe a bacon ranch.
Okay.
You know, with a small macaroni shell. I recently gotten into cavatappi pasta. Okay. So sometimes I'll throw a little cavatappi. I'm into trying new pastas.
Okay.
So you guys are so classy. I'm so impressed by you guys. Good job. What's
your answer, George?
I don't know. Probably a dip. I think they call it cowboy caviar, but it's like a black bean corn and red onions and chop it up with some cilantro and olive oil and just bring some chips over. It's so good. So I do like that. It's my good.
All right. I'm down for this. When are we having this barbecue?
I know. It sounds delicious. Sounds fantastic. One last question. So I have a Traeger. I like to smoke pulled porks and pork, you know, pork sandwiches as well. Part of my recipe is putting coleslaw on top of a pulled pork sandwich. Are you guys into that as well? Or is that a turnoff for you guys?
No, as a South Carolinian, that is definitely that's
a go-to staple.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. For sure. Cool.
Now we can talk about how the coleslaw is supposed to be made and whether you're dumping a lot of mayonnaise in there or if you're using more oil. I like a little less mayonnaise and more oil, but
yeah.
No, I think, I don't think I've ever had a barbecue sandwich without coleslaw.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's good to know. There you go.
Yeah, all right, so if you invited me over for barbecue, you know, make sure the coleslaw is there.
There you go. We'll definitely keep that in mind for the fall. All right, gentlemen. So obviously we're here not to talk about barbecue, but talk about Commander's mini camp. Craig, we'll start off with you. You know, it's kicking it off today. We have three straight days of practices that we could potentially watch and hear feedback on. What are some of the storylines that are intriguing to you going into the mini camp right this week?
I mean, the obvious one is quarterback. I mean, good job, Craig. Really nailed the analysis there. Really, really bring the creativity. But it's the most important position in pro sports. And, you know, for the Commanders to have this significant of a question there, I think is obviously that's what we're seeing. And I think also like the maybe more important question long term is how the offensive line holds up. But they're not wearing pads. So not to say I don't care how they look this week. There are certain things, and, you know, I'm lucky enough to work with Logan, who can, you know, break down a lot of these, whether it's pass sets and coverages, or, you know, pass protection plans or run fits and all these types of things. Like, he can tell me whether they're doing it right or wrong. And I'm very grateful for that. But quarterback play is going to be obviously essential, and you can really evaluate it. How do they make decisions, not just in 11 on 11, but in 7 on 7 and some of these team skeleton drills where they're doing like 2 on 2 to 4 on 4. And there's real decision-making and accuracy things that you can glean from that. So there are other questions about the football team in general, but the really only one I have that I feel like we can get some resolution on, oh, I shouldn't say the only, the main one is quarterback play. I guess the other one that kind of comes to mind is DB play. Although I think the stakes are lower there because I feel better about it. But how do they continue to move around Forbes, Fuller, and St. Juste, and who else is kind of in the mix? Especially now that Cam Curl should theoretically be back on the field. I doubt he's going to sit out as much as he has during the OTA periods. So how do they rotate the safeties, getting Quan Martin involved, all that kind of stuff. So I think those are the two big ones, you know, with line play hanging over as an overhanging question until we get deeper into training camp and they're actually wearing pads.
Gotcha. Craig, I was scouring through Twitter briefly before we got on here this morning, and Ron's back to answering quarterback questions. I get he's going to be asked that up until week one. Is it necessary to answer the question? Because he has continued to say that we're going to have a quarterback competition. We haven't seen Brissett take one snap with the starters. So while I get that it's early and the young fella needs way more snaps than, say, Brissett does, who's been in the league for a while, is it necessary for Ron to even answer these questions about there being a competition? Does it only open him up to more criticism about the idea that it doesn't look like there's actually a competition?
No, because I actually don't think he's lying. I think they want Sam to run away with it, and that's the best case scenario for the franchise, because now you got to, you know, as long as he then plays well during the season, you have a young franchise quarterback on a rookie contract moving forward. And it's important to remember Brissett's only on a 1-year deal. So even if Brissett plays well, like, what do you do next year? Do you have the on the wrong side of 30, says a 33-year-old, wrong side of 30, quarterback who just did it on a 1-year deal and move forward with that next year, if he's your guy? Like, it leaves a lot of questions. So in that sense, they're giving Sam every opportunity to win the job, and that's going to involve reps, and to get better, and that's going to involve reps. And I think Jacoby can get ready with a lot more meeting room stuff and snaps with and against the twos. And then if Sam is struggling, and, you know, we can talk about the trends of how those two quarterbacks are doing here in a second if you want. But like, if Sam struggles when we get to August, then you start introducing Jacoby with some one reps, and you see how these 3 days go. And obviously with the last OTA that they're going to have, I think, one practice on Tuesday next week. And then you sit down, you review all the tape. And, you know, I think if Sam hasn't proven that he's on the right track or there's worry there, you start introducing, you know, an 80-20 split of the one reps to start training camp, and then see how it goes. And if you need to increase Jacoby's reps because he might win the job, okay. And if not, then you back them off and you go forward with Sam. But I think the bigger risk, Doug, than opening yourself up for questions and any kind of narrative related thing is looking back at the spring and going, oh crap, we didn't give Sam enough reps. And I think that's the bigger worry. So that's why I think his answers are fine and his plan right now is fine.
That's a fantastic answer. And Craig, I know you had the chance to go out to training camp last week and saw Sam Howell firsthand. I'm just curious, you know, we've heard the trends, and I've actually heard your podcast, Take the Command, and heard everything about your perspective on it, but how did Sam Howell look? And then how would a successful, what would be improvement in your eyes? Like, what do you want to see from Sam Howell moving forward?
So I would say he looks fine. And what I mean by that is he's on track. He's young. He's extremely inexperienced. Mm-hmm. He is in a brand new offense. He is playing against what we think is a pretty good defense with, you know, a setup in training camp practice. And Logan describes this extremely well on our podcast, but like, the way the drills are set up are not necessarily to the offense's advantage at this part of the season, because what happens is the defense gets cards and they literally like look at the card and they go, okay, this is what the offense is going to do. They practice against the route combination on their own field. So it's like you have defensive players who put the little yellow skull caps over their helmets and are playing offense, but you practice against the concept, you know what's coming. And by the way, there's no running plays that are happening. So anything that's play action based, or even just kind of an honesty in terms of depth and how you come off the line of scrimmage against the run, is not present. So it's very tilted in that way towards the defense. And Sam's having to go against that. And the deeper they've gotten into it with more reps for the defense against some of these route concepts, it's gotten harder and harder. The windows are getting smaller and smaller. Guys like Forbes and Martin are getting better and better by the second, which is great. Mm-hmm. But it does make things hard on Sam. And so I do wonder over these 3 days, do they do what Logan called a move the ball period, right? Where it's less predictable and there is a little more honesty. What happens when you introduce the run game? But is Sam doing so, like, in that way, is Sam thriving? Is he crushing it? No. Mm-hmm. But is he on track? Is he doing fine? Is he doing the things that you kind of expect from a player of his caliber, his age, his experience level in the ecosystem in which he's being put? Yeah. So in that way, I think he's doing fine. I think Brissett is getting better as he gets more comfortable in the offense, understands the timing and the rhythm. And I think that the younger guys on offense, according to what Logan was saying, the younger guys on offense, like the UDFAs, the guys that he's playing with, are coming along faster and better than that same kind of caliber player on defense. So Brissett has got some pretty talented guys that he's working with and is going against guys who don't really understand the route concepts and things because they've just never seen an NFL offense before. And so he's like his production, if you will, is trending in a better direction than Sam's. But that's all completely predictable and explainable within all of the factors that I just said.
Gotcha.
Greg, how do you think they juxtapose the offense with a young quarterback that they don't want to put a ton on his shoulders? Understandable. But they've got a ton of weapons. And the idea, right, is to be able to at least get the ball to those weapons. We've got to also, you've got a head coach that's defensive minded with a really good, to your point, defense. How do you think they mesh that together this year with playmakers all over the offense who are needing to get the ball, who are wanting to get the ball, with a and an offensive scheme that likes to get them the ball, with a quarterback, you know, that you're not trying to get, you certainly don't want to making mistakes and feeling bad early.
Right. It's a great question, Doug. And this is where Eric Bieniemy earns every dollar right. that he's getting paid. Right. And I think that there is kind of I don't say a misnomer because I feel like more people are reading like the Warren Sharps of the world now and kind of understand this. So I don't want to like insult anybody who's a football fan who's like, oh, you think you're a big haunting media guy with a radio show and you're smarter than all of us. But like there is a little bit of, let's call it conventional wisdom, that just taking stuff off the quarterback's plate makes his job easier. And that's not necessarily true because what you wind up doing is you oversimplify things and it's actually just easier for the defense. Mm-hmm. And so Sam is smart. And can handle a lot of the verbiage and kind of the mental load of this offense. And that leads to a lot of screenplays and a lot of things that are not really hard decisions, but he's got to remember the play. And, you know, that sounds a lot easier than it is when you have this wide volume of plays with a bunch of different formations, a bunch of different personnel groupings. There's a lot happening. But just because they might wind up passing the ball, you know, 60% of the time, 65% of the time, doesn't mean that every single pass is a five-step drop, read the entire field and make a decision. And I think that's where Scott Turner got himself in a lot of trouble last year, was his run pass percentages weren't that different from a lot of the league. But Kyle Shanahan will drop Brock Purdy back five times of 25 passes, and Scott Turner will drop Carson Wentz or Taylor Heineke back 20 times out of 25 passes. And that's not a formula for success. So a quick smoke screen, a whatever other screen, a shovel pass, like those are predetermined reads, and it's really not that different than a handoff. Yet they'll count as passes and go towards his stats. And, you know, when we talk about run pass percentages, that'll mess up all of our numbers. And so I think that is kind of the answer to your question is, he lets Sam cook in getting the ball out of his hands quickly, getting the ball to the playmakers, whether it's on jet sweeps, reverses, smoke screens, quick slants, like stuff that happens quickly with very, very little decision-making needed by the quarterback, while also keeping the width of the field. Like that stuff also means the defense has to guard every blade of grass, all that kind of stuff, and using different formations and alignments to make things complicated for the defense and allow that level of success. And hopefully that also leads obviously to success and staying on the field more. That kind of satisfies the run first desire of Rivera to keep the defense fresh, and it all kind of plays into each other. It's very cyclical in that way.
I can see that. And yeah, I don't know if I actually caught this from you, Craig, but were you a fan of the whole plan of investing in Sam Howell and building around the team around him to kind of go that direction? Or were you more curious of pursuing another quarterback option over the offseason?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of love this question in the offseason because I'm a huge fan of what they did in that I felt like it was the only option. And so people, I think theoretically exploring other options, like, sure. But I would always ask people, okay, well, what's your option?
What are the options? Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, well, you don't know until you're aggressive. I'm like, no. Like, I'm giving you carte blanche. You're the GM. You tell me who's out there, and then I'll be the other GM on the other end of the phone and tell you no. So, like, it's hard. Like, good quarterbacks don't become available. Why? Because they're good quarterbacks. It's the most valuable thing in the sport. And so, unless you get one in the draft, or something wacky happens with an injury a la a Drew Brees situation, you're just not going to get a good quarterback, or like someone dead wants out, Rodgers in Green Bay, et cetera. And even that tends to come with some baggage. And we'll see how that goes with the Jets.
I agree.
So I think that it was kind of the only option. And I think given the ownership situation and how that affects Ron's contract, I am all in favor of let's see what happens with Howell. If he's good, great. If not, everybody's gone, start over. Because the kind of cyclical hellscape this franchise has been since Robert Griffin got drafted is the quarterback gets put on the coach. Coach and quarterback get into a fight, or it doesn't work out. Coach gets fired. Quarterback stays, but only stays for 1 year until the new coach is able to convince the owner that that guy's not actually the answer. Then new coach drafts new quarterback, repeat cycle.
Exactly.
And Griffin to Cousins and Shanahan to Gruden to Haskins and Rivera and the whole deal. And it will just be nice to, if they have to start over with a fresh everything and everybody on the same timeline. Because that eliminates a lot of problems.
How good does Sam have to be this year to not get replaced?
Ooh, that's a good question. I have not been asked one before. And I feel like I've been asked every question about possible quarterbacks. I mean, I think it comes down to like, do they feel like they can win games with him? I'd hope the evaluation is more nuanced than like quarterback wins. But I do feel like if he performs at a level that he's not like, he's good enough that he's part of the reason they're winning. That's how I'll phrase that. Where he is at least a neutral, if not a slight net positive. And I don't know what that looks like statistically, but you know, not turning the football over, hitting the shots that he's supposed to, making good decisions. You know, even if he doesn't always nail the accuracy, is the ball going the right place? And they feel like he can continue to grow on that. I think that's probably good enough because the appeal of having above average quarterback play on one of the best contracts in the league for a couple more years, I think is super, super appealing. And so in a lot of ways, Doug, it comes down to like a production per dollar metric, you know, if you will. You've got to, at the end of next year, you've got to have a chance to get a quarterback who can give you more production per dollar than the very small dollars that you're giving Sam. And so unless they stink, and they're picking, you know, top half of the draft, I don't know how that's really going to be possible, unless Sam's really bad and the production's not there, because that also obviously brings down your production per dollar metric if there's no actual production.
And Craig, one of the larger like storylines this offseason has been the absences at OTAs with Chase Young, Montez Sweat, and Charles Leno. What was your overall thoughts on that whole dynamic? Like, do you think that they should have been there? Do you think there's, you know, they're training on their own, so OTAs are not necessarily the most important things in the world? Like, what's your stance on that?
So I tend to believe that, especially for younger players, OTAs are the best place to get better. I don't really get caught up in a lot of the narrative element of it. Like, what does this mean for Chase and Ron's relationship? Nothing. It doesn't matter at all. Like, sure, it's probably annoying for Ron and, you know, whatever, but if Chase goes out and has a mega season, then Ron's not gonna be like, well, I'm mad at you for not showing up for OTAs, no contract. Like, No, that's not how pro sports work. It's not how any workplace works. You produce, you get the contract, you get paid. And that's that. But the way I kind of look at it, if you want to make it analogous to a different workplace, like if I am offered a training by my parent company, Odyssey, to be better at my job, they're like, listen to watch this module and you can become a better radio host. And I choose not to watch the module because it's voluntary. I don't have to, but it's a resource offered to me. And it comes up time for my contract and I didn't perform well enough. Well, they're going to be like, well, we gave you the resources. We gave you the module. What were you doing? I don't know. I was watching YouTube videos on my own. Okay. Well, we told you we're professionals. We know what we're doing on the coaching front. So it comes down to, did Chase do the thing that's going to make him the best football player? Mm-hmm. I think at this point in his career, with the very limited experience he has had because of his injury, I would have gone to OTAs. That would have been my recommendation to him. Go be with your teammates, all that kind of stuff. Learn the scheme. You know, your physical talent is immense. You've got to learn how to play within the scheme better. Be there. It is a gesture of goodwill. You know, it's nice to be around the guys, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, did he do the thing that's going to make him the best football player? Mm-hmm. Well, it's impossible to say. Like, he could go out and be awesome in the fall, and, you know, he could have been 5% more awesome if he showed up. It could be that he made the right move. I don't know. I think it's less of a big deal for Montez because he's actually got the snaps. I think the same for Leno. It's kind of annoying in that you wish he was there to help teach some of the younger guys because he does know the system. And the way I'd also put it is this week is practice 7, 8, and 9 for most of these guys. And it's going to be practice 1, 2, and 3 for all these guys. So everyone else is 6 practices ahead. What's the value of that? Hard to quantify. I don't think it's that big of a deal. I do think it's interesting to note, we'll say, that 98% of the league shows up for this stuff. They seem to think it's a good idea. Obviously, let's say 60% of the league has to show up because they're bottom half of the roster guys or just slightly better. That's the nature of 60%, not 50. George, I don't know if what you teach is math, but just in case, I figured I'd cover my bases there. That's kind of where I sit. You know, when Trent Williams doesn't show up, I don't care. He's Trent. He needs to work on stuff that's different because he's a superhuman. When you're Chase Young, you think you're a superhuman and you haven't quite proven that yet. I think it's a little more up for debate, but if this helps him, if he's in a good place now and he understands the defense and he produces, then, you know, who cares?
Craig, I don't think we've talked about this before, and I guess I'm just nosy by nature, but you were covering the Redskins for a while back when they were the Redskins, left for a while, did the Washington Spirit, I think, right? And now back to the radio. What made you decide to come back and do radio? And specifically so much back with the Commander stuff now.
Economics, Doug, economics.
it's a poor excuse, I'm not buying it.
Pandemic was obviously rough for everyone and all things 100%. Considered, I do not think that my situation was the worst thing. I'm also lucky to have a career in fitness and was able to do a lot of training. But ultimately my job with the Spirit, the full-time gig got eliminated. They kept me on part-time for a while doing some projects, like some of the on-air stuff that I did, but I took a mega slash, I guess, in responsibility to some of the behind the scenes stuff I was doing, cause I was no longer full-time. And then I upped my training and whatever. And eventually when Travis Thomas left for Boston to go take the job at Nesson, my boss, Chris Kinard, who was my boss when I was with 106.7 The Fan and has been great to me my entire career in DC. He was literally the first person I called when I got let go from the Spirit. My position was just cut. It was pandemic induced economics. And he's like, great. I'll put you back in the rotation. I started doing part-time and, you know, 6 months later or 3 months later, Travis left. Eventually they go through the hiring process and move some things around and I'm doing afternoon drive. So then once you're in the spot, the audience wants Commanders. So that's where I talk about the Commanders. Would I like to talk about a wider variety of subjects? Many days. The thing about radio is it's broadcasting. It's not narrowcasting. You know, if I want to do a Wizards podcast or I want to do a whatever, if I want to do more stuff on the Spirit, which I try to do still, you know, cover things that I like to talk about. I love watching WNBA hoop, but as those audiences build, does it cross into the threshold that it's got a bigger, broader audience than the Commanders. Not yet. I think those margins are chipping away at both ends, frankly. And I think that's, you know, that's a whole different discussion about the Dan Snyder era versus what's possible under Josh Harris. And, you know, but, you know, at the current time, if I want to get ratings, I basically can't talk enough Commanders. you know, I'll tell this 30-second version of the story, but I was talking with CK, my boss, about this at one point with the Carson Wentz stuff last year. And I was kind of like, you know, jokingly, like, you know, you know, if I wanted to maximize my ratings, I would just talk about Carson Wentz literally every segment. And he kind of gives me this look like,
that's
correct. I'm not going to make you do it because all of us would lose our minds.
Yeah.
And there's just like, but the way, not to get too deep into it, but the way like radio audiences work, because people are in and out of their cars, like the way people listen, it's not like a podcast where you listen to the whole show and it's on demand and right. You know, you stop, right. You pause, you pick it back up later when you get back in your car, or, you know, you pause in your car, you go home, you put it back on while you're making dinner. Like people listen to radio in their cars and they listen. Luckily, you know, we build up a nice digital audience where people are listening in other ways, but the audience still turns over the course of the 3-hour show. So I wind up talking about a lot of the same stuff over the course of the show, try to present it a little differently, a little more interestingly, but that's kind of the art of radio. If I peel back the curtain, perhaps more than I should have.
No, you do a fantastic job, Greg. I appreciate it too.
Thank you.
And then Craig, follow question on that. So I think you have a very interesting perspective as a strength and condition coach. Do you actually use that lens when you're watching the NFL and watching players out in the field? And I'm also curious, like, you know, thinking about Chase Young's recovery, like, do you kind of consider that and kind of what should we be looking for in regard to how healthy he is right now?
Yeah. So the second part of your question, yes. When I talk about injuries, I can't help but tap into that part of my brain. Like I have a knowledge base there that the average reporter does not, because they, and just like, you know, other reporters may have more of a business background or whatever else it may be. It's hard to, I would say, like watching a game, it's hard to apply that because like at the end of the day, they're playing football. You don't get bonus points for being stronger or faster. You know, my co-host on my training podcast, Chris Gores, has a great saying where he's like, they're never going to take a touchdown off the board because when the guy, you know, made a cut, he didn't have perfect technique. Like you get the job done and you cross 100%. The end zone and you get 6 points. Yeah. But I do think it helps. One, I think it helps inform any injury related stuff, training related stuff. And when I was actively on the beat, it definitely gave me a little bit more credibility as I would talk about this stuff with some guys. And then I think being in that world, like I learn things about certain players or the way they train or whatever, because I know the strength coaches. And so I'm able to call on a little bit different of a source Rolodex, and get some background stuff that other people might not. And like, it's fun to go up to a player and be like, yeah, I know your strength coach. Like, oh, so-and-so at Exos. Like, yeah, that's my boy. You know, so I've definitely had that over the years as well, that's cool. There's like an added credibility. I'll tell a quick story because stories are fun. So Trent Williams had a glute issue. I'm trying to remember the year, probably 2017-ish, 2016, 2017, somewhere in there. And it was his left glute that was like causing him left hip, you know, that was causing him issues. But I think it was a muscular thing. It was a glute. And they had just said, like, you know, Williams, questionable glute. And I remember asking him, like, which glute is it? Which is a funny question to ask. Which side of your butt hurts, man? And so he's like, it's my left. And I'm like, oh, so you're fine. Like, you're going to play because you kick off your right. And he's like, you do know what you're talking about. I was like, yes, Trent, I do know what I'm talking about. Believe it or
not. That's awesome. Yeah.
The silly questions I ask you, they actually come from a somewhat informed place. But like little things like that where I just, you know, kind of understand how the body works at a slightly higher level because I have a different professional training. I think has helped me at times over the years.
Okay.
I'd segue here. I didn't.
Oh, what's the natural segue from Trent's butt?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll take the left, just the word left.
I'm going to pivot left.
We're talking a lot about the secondary and who will play which where. And I think if we're willing to agree that Forbes probably gets first chance at QB1 simply because of his draft status, then we're left with two guys that are still better suited to play outside than they are inside. If I recall correctly, and this is where I was getting to, is it feels like Fuller's played most of his time right outside and with St. Juice and William Jackson III before that playing on the left side. It feels like when I'm watching the tape, it's Forbes on the right outside in college. Now, if we're talking left tackle to right tackle, my understanding is that is incredibly difficult to do, much less, but much like learning how to switch from writing right-handed to left-handed. I'm curious if you've had conversations, if you know yourself or if you've had conversations with Logan, is that same conversion at corner equally difficult, or is it not? Is it not so much? Because I think we're having this conversation on who can play opposite Forbes. Maybe that's important. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question. I've actually never thought of it that way. I mean, in the footwork is so intricate on the offensive line. It's obviously intricate playing DB, but I think some of the stuff that's like pushing off from a certain side is much less intense in terms of the side-to-side variance that you would have. I could probably make some kind of very nuanced argument about vision and just like comfort level, you know, seeing things from one side versus the other. But I think it matters less on the defensive back. Like, there is certainly a difference if you were to test any athlete side to side and opening their hips right and left. And that, you know, is part of like extrapolated, let's say, from the same thing that you're going to generate more or less power on your golf swing, your baseball swing, twisting one way versus the other. Our bodies are strong side dominant on our strong sides, and thus twisting in one direction versus the other is going to be percentage points easier, faster, quicker, more fluid going one way versus the other. Is that enough to make a difference really in the NFL? I would say probably not, because it's like once we're at that level of movement, versus something as detailed, and it's something that is as reliant on that twisting motion as a baseball or a golf swing. I think we're talking about like fractions of a percent. And also you have to do it both ways. Like, you know, you get put a double move on going right, left versus left, right. Like, you better be good both directions. So those things come up, I think, pretty evenly. And like, you know, if you think about backpedaling and then driving on a ball, you could do that off of either foot. There's not like a left or right thing. You can push off and change your linear direction, however is comfortable for you. So short answer, no, I don't think it matters that much from like a physical technical side, from like a mental vision side, how you see it. I'd have to ask DBs. But I do think like
who do you think ends up starting opposite?
Well, I'll add this one like two sentence thing. I do wonder if there are, based off percentages that NFL teams have, one side winds up playing boundary versus field more often. And that would seem like the bigger deal. Like, you have a little bit more, a little bit less space to work with that. And that, but honestly, I don't know. I think Fuller is going to play outside. And I think that is the correct move. I just think at this stage of his career, like, he has not been very good inside in a while. BSJ showed some promise there. I think the problems in their secondary last year when he was inside were much, much, much more William Jackson III related. So I tend to think that's how that goes. I do think they'll mix and match, though. I think it's going to be really interesting, honestly, to see how that goes, because I also think they like, you know, Quan Martin, for instance, a lot more inside. Like, they're going to not necessarily be in a rush to have three corners on the field all the time. And does Martin play like a true nickel? So as opposed to just the Buffalo. So I think that that's going to be super interesting to watch over the course of these next 3 days. And ultimately in the training camp, is you've kind of got four safeties. You like, you got three corners. You really like, they all can mix and match in a bunch of different places. They can all move around. You don't want to make your defense too complicated for your own players, but you do want to mix it up enough to make it complicated for the offense to figure out what the hell's going on. So, I think they have a lot of good options. The good news is they don't have to decide yet, but I do think, you know, for instance, those two practices against Baltimore are going to go a long way to deciding how that ultimately goes.
You know, picking back up on that. So, you know, Ron Rivera definitely champions position flex and kind of being, you know, put like, you know, moving the offensive lineup down the off, you know, guard or tackle. We're seeing Emmanuel Forbes play the slot, and that's been a lot of like provocativeness and polarizing conversations over the past couple of weeks. Are you in favor of allowing players to bounce around and kind of try different things out? Or are you more keen on just specializing and, you know, this is a position I want you to focus on over camp and just become really great at it? What do you think?
This time of year, I love cross training. I think it's cool. Logan and I have talked about this on the podcast, and probably we'll do like a longer episode on this soon. I would, if I was a coach, like if I was a head coach, which is never going to happen, no one is ever going to hire me for that position in the NFL. If I was a head coach, on a day that the media wasn't out there, I would fully flip offense and defense. And I would just take a day to be like, and now it's hard this year corner. Because Cosme would probably play a defensive end, but like, yeah, that's not too crazy. Yeah. But like, I think there's value in knowing like, okay, what is the offense trying to do to me as a defender? Well, let's find out. Like, and you can let EB coach up the defensive players on offense and you let Jack coach up, you know, and you just get that experience, like full flip and maybe not a full practice, do a couple periods, but just get that experience and see what it's like to have a better understanding of what is trying to be done to you and how you can exploit that. Mm-hmm. So by the same token, if I am Emmanuel Forbes and I'm playing outside, but I know what the nickel is experiencing, I can help that player better. Mm-hmm. And I think also specific to Forbes and specific to the nickel, things happen so much faster inside. Him getting used to that speed will make things feel slower on the outside. And so I think that is part of the cross training. Also, it helps prepare you in case there's injuries. Like what happens in the middle of the year if, you know, a couple of their inside guys get hurt, and in order to get their best three guys on the field, the other guy that's coming in can't play inside. You move Forbes inside and you say, hey man, you're super talented. Remember how we did this in May? Have fun, buddy. And you're better prepared. Like I think that the NFL, the nature of it is the more situations you can prepare for, the better, the more options you have, the better. But here's the big caveat where, you know, everyone is screaming right now that I'm endorsing full position flex all the time is, you still need guys to play their main position. Like mm-hmm. you should have a plan for if things go well, I've got great players at position X, Y, Z all the way down. So I think they can overrate it a little bit. But I think this time of year is the time to experiment with it and see what you have and give players different experience that can help them become better at their actual position.
Gotcha. Go ahead, Doug.
I was thinking while you were saying that, I think Alabama and thereby Georgia now does that where they flip for just for a little bit. They do a lot of ones versus ones each week, and they do a lot of, I think, that cross like back and forth so that you get a better feel for leverage and seeing explosion from the other side. I think is valuable. To your point, what is it that we should be looking for in training camp? We're all looking at the same things right now. What should we be looking at that we're not looking at?
I really don't think that there's much, not to cop out on an answer, but like, is the offensive line good? Is the quarterback good? That's what I want to know. And those are going to be the biggest determinants of success. Are there other things that pop up? Like, should we pay attention to the linebacker rotation? Yes. Should we pay attention to, you know, the tight end room and see who's kind of emerging there? Yes. Should we pay attention to the return game? Maybe that's one that you could put and see whether one of these UDFAs or someone else can make the roster or do something on special teams. That's always a, you know, end of roster question. And sometimes guys make the team and it doesn't make sense based off of how they played cornerback or wide receiver, but it's like, no, that dude's an ace special teamer. He's got to make it. Those are kind of things, but I think because Doug, the questions are so overwhelming at quarterback and offensive line that our attention is in the right place. Like
I agree.
When we get to training camp. Let's see how the line is. They got, you know, by day four, they got pads on how they play and who is playing, especially at left guard. And then obviously how does Sam come along and can he do enough to be better than Brissett? Cause if you're better than Jacoby Brissett, you're a real NFL quarterback who's probably above average. And that's going to be, should be good enough to win, you know, more games than they lose this year.
Is this team better off playing in 21 personnel or 12? You know, they did a lot of 12 in Kansas City, but they had the tight ends to play for.
Yeah.
You know, Kelsey is a better blocker, I think, than people realize. They had the belldozer there. We have maybe better blocking backs than we do. Like, I mean, outside of Bates, who you got on in the tight end room that you like. So, I mean, that was a little long-winded just to give you a chance to think about it. Which one do you prefer? Because they've both been called cheat codes by some.
Yeah, I tend to lean 21 with this group because I think Gibson can be really impactful. I mean, this dude was a 1,000-yard rusher.
Yeah.
Like, and they're like, we got to draft another guy. And it's like, I mean, I know he fumbled a little bit, but he seems like he's pretty good at football. Let's get him the rock. And so I think part of that too is like, who are your best playmakers? How do you get them on the field? Which, like, are there things they could do with 22 personnel that are really interesting? Yes. Does that then take too many of Dotson, McLaurin, and Samuel right off the field? Also, yes. So let's not mess around with 22 any more than we have to. And that's where you have to start making tough decisions of, okay, how do the matchups play out when I'm in this grouping and this alignment and this whatever versus the actual, you know, X's and O's versus Jimmy and Joe's, if you will. How does the actual human beings who are the X on the whiteboard match up? Well, Terry versus anyone is an advantage for Terry. You know, let's not overthink that one too much. You know, Jahan, pretty much the same. Curtis on a lot of especially third DBs, or God forbid a team tries to put a linebacker on him. Like, that's an advantage in Washington's favor. So, you know, obviously there will be a fair amount of 11. That's going to be the number one grouping. But to mix it up and to create some different mismatches, I like the idea of 21 because you can do a lot of different stuff with it. You can move Gibson all over the place. But I do think you'll see some 12 too. I think, you know, whether it's Logan and Bates, whether it's, you know, Cole Turner and one of the other guys, like there's a lot you can do where you can line guys up. I mean, because that's the other thing too. Like, let's say they're in 21, to go back to that. You can line up in 21 with Samuel in the backfield and Gibson outside.
Like, that's true.
You can do all these funky things that break rules and shift, and you can, you know, move guys from three by one and then to 2x2, and defenses are having to adjust. Like, there's just a lot of stuff because these guys can line up at sort of so many different places and legitimately be threats. It's not just to like mess with defenses. It's like, oh, we got to get this right because that guy's dangerous. And I think that doing the right amount of that while also not making things too overly complicated for your own personnel is kind of the sweet spot that Bieniemy's trying to find.
I love that. I have one more question for you, Doug. For Craig, and Doug can throw one in there too. Speaking of that, Eric Bieniemy is very creative. You know, we have a lot of offensive weapons, potentially new ownership coming down the pike. What are your thoughts on the team getting Hard Knocks? Are you excited about that? Do you think it's actually going to happen, or do you think it's going to, you know, step
for,
on?
For a radio man, it's got to be great.
I'm about to say, yeah, like, I'm curious about that.
For the team or for me?
Everything. I want to hear your perspective. What do you think about it?
For me, please God. Whatever deity it is that you believe in, I would like everybody listening and or watching to pray to that deity that for my radio show, the Commanders get Hard Knocks. I'm being selfish. That's for me. Give me every bit of access that I can always get.
That's true.
You can't get better access than Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
With that said, I don't know what's the best thing for the team. You know, there's all these storylines that come out. I mean, I think it can be great for individual players. Like, you know, if you've got charity work that you do, you've got, you know, it's very humanizing. I think that's always great. You know, so I think there's a lot of positives that could come out of it for individuals, and it can obviously be good for a team at times. I think last year's Lions are a really interesting example because they had Hard Knocks, started terrible, but then finished great. I think players tend to get used to the cameras, it sounds like, based off a lot of interviews and stuff that I've seen. But I think if you're a coach, you generally want less access and less kind of things that you can control going out. I know they have some level of control, but it's not ultimate control. Mm-hmm. And for a media member like me, I want all the access I can ever get. Please give me more insight. Please give me more content. The dog days of August. Cause you know, everyone loves when training camp starts and it's like, what's our top 10 storylines. And then by 2 weeks in, all you've done is practice and nothing has happened. And it's some of the hardest radio I will do all year. And if you give me a Hard Knocks episode to talk about, hell yeah. Like, I'll talk about Hard Knocks anyway. I'll talk about Hard Knocks if it's another team. Yeah. So if it's this team, shoot, that's my full show. Let's go.
It's a home run. Perfect.
And Ron's got experience with cameras around. Right?
That's true.
They did one before when he was
in Amazon, right?
Yeah, I actually went back before last season and watched that and thought it was really, really insightful into how he handles certain situations, who he is as a person. You see some of the reasons why he's so highly regarded. I think you also see some of the weak areas. But you also see like a side of him in meeting rooms and stuff that you don't see in the press. And I think that's valuable to know, that like the arms folded, you know, whatever stoic demeanor is, I don't want to say a show, but like it's intentional. And it's different. And, you know, we did get to see the fiery side of Ron last year. Unfortunately, it was yelling about how his analytics told him to go acquire Carson Wentz. But, yeah. you know, you see some of that and how it exists. And
all,
how it plays
all four of them.
Oh, don't get me started on that, Doug. We don't need to.
Although I think, was it you? Somebody told me they hired two more guys. We're up to six now.
That's great. I just don't. I'll say this about analytics. I'm just gonna say this, and then we're gonna move on, so I don't get myself in trouble. Analytics is merely data. Everyone has the same data. The difference is who's looking at it and knowing what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna leave that right there.
Perfect.
Today, let's wrap with it. Today's pick, last one for me at any rate. Today's pick'em question is that I've got on Twitter, Craig, is. Rank the coaches, Mike Shanahan, Jay Gruden, and Ron Rivera.
Ooh, that's...
For their time.
Yeah.
You know, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's very, very easy.
But I'm talking about in Washington.
Yeah, career-wise, it would be Shanahan, Rivera, Gruden. Right. That's too easy. By the way, you're so good at Twitter, it makes me angry. can I hire you to run my Twitter feed?
Please.
You don't want some of those mentions. I'm in fights with Wizards fans.
That's so fun. I saw it this morning, actually.
I was like, oh, God, why did I whack this hornet's nest again? I didn't mean to. All right, enough stalling. For their time in Washington, man, that's tough. So Gruden has the longest career of the three, which is kind of insane. And he, outside of the first year that he kind of inherits from Shanahan, and the last year where he gets fired, he was kind of around 500 the entire time. He wins a division title. I'm kind
very of similar to Rivera.
The problem is they all get like a 65, right? It's like one gets a 65, one gets a 64, one gets a 63. So I don't want to catch flack for saying that like there's a bunch of separation here, but I think I'm tempted to put Gruden first. And then Shanahan, and then Rivera. But I will flip Shanahan and Gruden because of the 2012 season. That is by far the single best season that anyone had. The problem for Shanahan is the other seasons were horrendous, especially the last one. It ended so badly. It was so bad. So he might have both the best and the worst season. And I think with Jay, his worst season is coming off like. His two worst seasons were heavily influenced by the owner and quarterback. Yep. Like he had to play Robert.
Imagine if Gruden had made a Rivera-style EB hire on defense. If they could have just had a defense on some of those Jay Gruden teams, he'd have been wildly successful here.
Right, and I think too, like you know, the first season is influenced by Griffin in a tremendous way, in a negative way, and that's on Dan. They finally win the power struggle and. Convince him that like it's time to go with Cousins. Bruce messes up everything, and look, Jay's flawed in a lot of ways, and I'm not telling you he's a great NFL head coach. I think he was solid, and then the last year like they needed way more, and they spend their first round pick on Haskins, so and that's 100% a Dan move. So I guess Shanahan first. Rivera's been like right mediocre the whole way through.
This is a tough question, not because they were like so fantastic.
Were you there for Shanahan, Craig? Were you there?
In 15, so I came in Jay's second year.
Gotcha. Okay.
I guess Shanahan, Gruden, Rivera, but I could make an argument for any order, to be honest, because like Rivera's been to like sing Ron's praises as to the extent these are praises. Like he has been consistent, and he's been consistently not terrible. And that is also something that no one else had really done in over a decade here. Like Shanahan was terrible at some points. Gruden was terrible in both his first and final years. And Ron, while he has not grown on the things that I think a lot of people were hoping, has had some bad luck at quarterback. The Fitzpatrick thing was super unlucky. You know, the Carson thing was an error of his own making, but they damn near made the playoffs, and he's been consistent. So they're all tied for first and last, Doug. I hate your question.
I can't wait to get to Twitter and check and see how stupid I am for what a stupid question.
I got to play it back, try to figure out what happened.
It's a better question than people will give.
It's a great question. I just don't know that there's a definitive answer. Like George, if you were to make a graphic for that, I would just be like sliding up back and forth.
Yeah, continue going
time.
Back and forth. Exactly.
And it just ends in question marks.
Exactly. All right, gentlemen. I really enjoyed talking to you guys. Craig, thank you for coming on. Craig, if you don't mind, kind of plug in your socials, what you're up to, what products you're working on, it'd be great.
So on Twitter at Craig Hoffman, I don't tweet nearly as much as I used to because the Bird app is, it's an interesting place these days. But radio show every single day, 4 to 7 on the Team 980, which of course you can listen to on 980 AM, 106.7 HD2 FM, the always free Odyssey app. You're welcome, bosses. And we do stream live on YouTube as well, on the Team 980's YouTube page, which I highly suggest watching, because my producer Anthony Haney loves to dance out in and out of every break, and it's very entertaining. Take Command podcast out twice weekly. Myself and Logan Paulson, available wherever you get your podcasts, on YouTube, on 106.7 The Fan's page for full episodes. And then I post a ton of stuff on my YouTube page as well, which is Craig Hoffman. So people can check that out there. And if you want the training stuff, the Train with the Best podcast, we try to publish once weekly, but Chris and I are very busy with jobs that actually pay us money. So our side hustle occasionally gets delayed.
All right, guys, I highly recommend following Craig on all those medias. Have to check out all the, his shows as well. He's very intuitive, very smart guy. I'm George Carmi, Command the Mic podcast. It's my co-host, Big Doug. Have a great night, guys. Take care. Peace.
Thank you, Craig.